few second delay. Well, welcome everybody. This is Lorraine Cohen, and I am so excited to welcome you all to today's compelling conversation. For those of you who don't know me, I've been on a spiritual journey for the past 30 years. I'm an internationally recognized life strategist, spiritual guide, and inspirational speaker. My gifts have assisted thousands of people worldwide to transform fear, to release their burdens, and liberate their true self, to live a life that is awake and authentic, and to create a reality that is conscious, deliberate, and meaningful. You know, in the emails that I receive, I continually read that people are struggling with generating more money, attracting more clients, building a sustainable business, doing the work that you love and feel called to do, and you know, I know what that feels like. And you might be feeling a little discouraged and disillusioned. Well, maybe delusioned, I don't know, because you have so much that you want to share, and maybe you've been on a journey for a while. You've attended tons of teleseminars, many of them that are promising to bring you a lot of money or things that you think that are going to be the answer. And what I want to suggest to you today is if you've come onto this call hoping that you're going to hear a magic formula that is going to help you to bring more money into your life, what you're actually being invited to hear is how to make a paradigm shift that will not only open up the field for you to experience true abundance that includes money and also allowing your life to be much more rich and meaningful. So I really invite you to listen with an open heart and mind and let go of any kind of mental chatter or any kind of mental expectation so that you can really be open to hear what Robert has to share. My special guest, as you know, is Robert Scheinfeld. We'll be talking about busting loose from the money game. And for those of you who don't know Robert, he's an author, speaker, and coach for spiritual awakening and consciousness expansion. For three decades, he searched for the truth. On his journey, he created many big successes that lacked the true success that he sought. His book, Busting Loose from the Money Game, shares what he learned from a pivotal conversation that began with his grandfather when he was 12 that catalyzed a 33-year adventure that Robert calls the treasure hunt of the century. Doesn't that sound exciting? In his journey, he discovered what he calls the busting loose model that provides the teachings to reclaim your natural state of true power, wisdom, abundance, and true joy. As I said, whatever you've heard about money, in today's conversation, I believe you're going to hear some things that will excite you and possibly blow your mind open to a paradigm shift. So everyone, please join me in welcoming Robert Scheinfeld. Welcome, Robert.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, I've got a lot of questions, and you know, I think that a good place for us to start is for you to tell a little bit about your journey into what you call true abundance that began when you were 12 years old with your grandfather. Why don't you share a little bit of that with the folks?
Well, right now I'll be 56 next month, so this all kind of started for me 44 years ago, which is a long time.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather was an extraordinary man across the board. There's a term, and I apologize to the women on the phone, the term was a sexist term, but it was called Renaissance man. It didn't just mean men, but it meant somebody that just was vastly talented across multiple disciplines, you know, like a Leonardo da Vinci or someone. And my grandfather was a man like that, and I held him in very high esteem as a kid. And from a business and money perspective, he turned an idea, literally, that he got on the docks of Chicago into one of the world's largest and most successful businesses, a company called Manpower, the world's largest temporary help agency. So there was an enormous amount of wealth and success in the traditional way. And growing up in that family, I became aware of the fact that there was some mysterious something, you know, behind the secret of his success.
Yeah.
And being a very curious kid, when I was 12, I started bugging him every time I interacted with him, which wasn't that much. We lived in different cities. And then finally, when the whole family was gathered for his 70th birthday, he took me aside and he says, "You've been bugging me and bugging me and bugging me, and I've been putting you off, and I'm finally going to answer some of your questions." And he started to talk to me about what he called the visible world and the invisible world, and that most people are trying to make stuff happen in the visible world, but the real power is in the invisible world. And if you can learn what those power sources are and learn how to tap them, there are no limits to what can be created, and that he had learned how to do that. And then he said something that haunted me for decades. He said, when you grow up and you start studying this kind of stuff, you're going to hear a lot of stuff that sounds like that.
Hmm.
Invisible power, universal laws, subconscious mind, all these kinds of things. And he said, "I'm not talking about that." He said, "What I'm talking about is something very few people know about, and the few who do know about it rarely talk about it." And so that built in a huge amount of skepticism. You know, if it was in plain sight, the odds are it was wrong, you know.
Yeah.
Or was missing something. And so that was very supportive to me on my journey. And so he talked a little bit more about money and stuff, but didn't really say all that much beyond what I just shared. And then we had a couple more conversations, and then he died suddenly and unexpectedly about 8 months later, leaving me with what really amounted to a gigantic tease, because he never told me what the power sources were. He never told me how to tap them. He just said, you know, everything I've created, that's where it ultimately came from. It didn't come from me, you know.
Right.
So I had an insatiable hunger that was started then to figure out, you know, what was he talking about, and I wanted to be able to tap those power sources, and I was very interested in having traditional success at that time. But I was a kid, you know, I was 12, so I did kid stuff for a long time, and then I dropped out of college and didn't finish and began a serious quest in my early 20s. And I had two things that I was trying to do. Number one, I was trying to create typical kind of prosperity and financial success for myself. And secondly, I was trying to figure out what he was talking about. And I continued along the path, and every now and then I thought, well, I think I finally, I kind of compare it to putting together a jigsaw puzzle. You know, I kept getting pieces, and every now and then I figured I was looking at the picture, and I had the magic formula like you talked about before, and then I would find out that I didn't, because in my life, and probably people on the call, some of them, if not all of them, can identify with this, I kept running this pattern of up, 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 and then just as I was about to go into the stratosphere of success, something would happen, and I would crash and burn and lose everything and have to start over, usually with a lot of debt and a big mess and a lot of confusion and frustration. I kept repeating that pattern, except every time I repeated it, the numbers got bigger. So it was thousands, and then it was tens of thousands, and then it was hundreds of thousands, and then it was millions. And when it was starting to happen again with millions, and I had a wife and a family, and they would have suffered greatly if I crashed and burned again, which was unacceptable to me, I had a really important moment, and a lot of people misunderstand this, and they think that getting mad at God or whatever is the secret to getting something. But what actually happened to me is I got really mad. I looked up at the sky as if I was talking to, I call it consciousness with a capital C or expanded self. There's all kinds of labels for it.
Yeah.
And I got mad, and I said, you know what? You teased the shit out of me when I was a kid. And I have been following, you know, this path ever since. And I've paid my dues, and I've done my due diligence, and I've, you know, followed what you asked me to do, and I just can't do this anymore, you know. So there's obviously something I'm missing, and either give it to me or get me the hell out of here, because I'm not willing to go through this up-down stuff anymore and crash and burn with my family. And I really meant it. I mean, and when I say get me out of here, I meant kill me off and end this, you know, story, because I won't do this anymore. And about 8 months later, I had a breakthrough. And the breakthrough started out with really, I was seeing a picture from an assembly of puzzle pieces. And it was clear, and it really was a picture that I was meant to see. I was not misinformed this time. And as I began to look at that picture and study that picture and follow the additional guidance I was getting, that's where Busting Loose from the Money Game came from, the book and other things that flowed from it. You know, massive frustration in hitting that wall, where I literally did look up to the sky and yelled and said, you better show me what I'm missing or get me the hell out of here, because I'm done, you know, and then everything from that moment on, while it has been still very challenging at times and very difficult to what I call exchange lies, illusion, and stories for the truth with a capital T, it's been an unbelievable adventure ever since, and it was the final solution to all of the things that I ultimately really wanted and also gave me clarity, as you mentioned before, on what true abundance is versus the fake abundance that most of us are taught about and seek. So that's a quick summary of a lot of years and a lot of experiences that were, as you said, literally mind-blowing and transformative and changed. You know, there's no area of my life, personal or professional, that has not been touched in deep and profound ways from this journey and what rippled out from that massive discovery or whatever you want to call it.
What is so funny to me, and I love the synchronicities when this happens, Robert, is that I've had that same conversation with God and actually said the exact same words that I just heard you say. And I think that there was something that was so important that you said about getting to the end where, what I call it getting helpless. And realizing that there's nothing more that you can do. And in that moment, because I've had a few of those moments, where it's really been about getting out of my own way so that I could really allow the pieces to come to me rather than this constant trying to push things up a hill, which is how it was feeling in a lot of ways. What I wanted to share with you, and I'm being prompted to just say this right now, I really appreciate the fact that you bring God into this conversation, because a lot of times when people come on and talk about consciousness, there's a little bit of reluctance to talk about God. And for me, the relationship that I have with God is very, very important and definitely something that I want to weave into our conversation. Because in the Busting Loose model, which I know that you're going to be talking about, I had a question about that, so I thank you for bringing that into the conversation right at the beginning.
Well, and just so that the people listening know, in general, I do not use that word.
Yeah.
And the reason I don't use that word is because I have a personal preference and bias for creating new words for things, because there are so many words that have so many connotations to them and distortions and conflicting definitions, and I like to stay away from that. So if somebody does follow up on this conversation and get involved in my work, you will not see me use that term for that reason.
Yeah.
It's just my preference. I like to come up with fresh labels for things and then attach new definitions to them. And so I just want to make that clear. And I totally get where you're coming from.
I think that that is such an important clarification. And certainly something that I like to point out as well, that we do assign different meanings and labels to a variety of different things. And I know for me personally, it's important for me to discover what those meanings are for me. And that's one of the beauties of having conversation, is realizing that we may think that we're talking about the same thing. And it's only until we get a little bit deeper that we discover that we might not be coming from the same perspective, and then the conversation gets very juicy and very meaningful.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so the Busting Loose model. You talk about phase two as the Busting Loose model, and what I'd like you to do is, what are the keys to this model?
Well, I could probably speak for 6 weeks about that. So, again, everybody listening understand that I'm going to go really fast through something that if we had the time, I could spend a lot of time with, but I'm just going to sketch. with broad strokes. There are several components to the model that are very unique and that for me were the missing pieces that really changed everything for me. Because as I said, that skepticism my grandfather installed in me had me ultimately test out and embrace so many things that are shared so often and then reject them, looking for where the real truth was and something that would really work reliably and that, you know, I could rely on. So I want to just summarize the three of them are the major components that make this model so unique and powerful. And first, what I'd like to do is quickly share a metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
This metaphor has been shared before, but it's so good that I have my own unique way of sharing it. It's a metaphor of the sun and the clouds. And most of the people listening have heard something like, we are spiritual beings here having a physical experience. The language may be different, but that's the message. And I agree with that. Who we really are is an infinite godlike being that it has more power, wisdom, abundance, and joy than any of us can possibly imagine as its natural state. And that's the equivalent of the sun. We think of the sun, we think of power and light and heat and energy, and so it's a good metaphor for the truth of who we really are. And then in order to come here and have this human experience, and I'll talk more about phase one, phase two, and phase three in a minute, we had to ultimately convince ourselves that we were not that, that we were the opposite of this amazing, infinite, godlike being. We were actually this, you know, I'm going to be a little heavy-handed here just to be aggressive to make a point, that we were this wimpy, you know, poor, powerless, little human at the mercy of all these forces beyond our control in this dangerous world kind of a thing. So we had to forget who we really were, and we had to lose touch with all of the infiniteness that was our natural state in order to come here and play what I call the human game. That's the equivalent of building a very solid, dense layer of cloud cover. Now, real clouds are smoky and misty, and you know, and you could put your hand through them. They're not solid. They can still block out the sun, but I want everyone to think about a layer of cloud cover that's like solid, like steel or diamonds or something, that's very hard to get through. And we build this cloud cover that blocks our experience of the sun of who we really are. Now, one of the reasons this metaphor is so powerful is because if the sun is who you really are and there's a layer of cloud cover that blocks it, your infiniteness and who you really are didn't go away. It didn't disappear. It's not gone. It's just blocked from view. So many of the things that we really want don't have to be created, don't have to be manifested, because they're already there. All you have to do is remove the block, and there's the sun of who you really are that can shine through. So that's the first thing. The first piece is that metaphor. The second piece is I discovered that I call it the human game that we're all here playing. My definition of game goes beyond board games or tennis or sports or something. To me, a game is anything that we do by choice for fun, for entertainment, to challenge ourselves, to play and explore and express ourselves creatively. So painting would be a game to me. Writing would be a game to me. Sculpting would be a game to me. Anything that we do, again, for those reasons. So we're here playing this human game. And what I discovered is there are three phases to the game. Phase one is all about building that cloud cover and convincing ourselves that we are the opposite of who we really are. So if who we really are is infinitely powerful, in phase one, and of course all this happens growing up, we convince ourselves in one way, shape, or form, or many shapes and forms, that we're powerless to one degree or another, opposite of our natural state, who we really are. If who we really are is infinitely wise, in phase one, the point is to convince ourselves that we're not wise. And if you think about how we all start this game as a baby, you know, you couldn't be any more, again, I'm going to be heavy-handed, you couldn't be any more stupid or unwise than a baby who knows nothing and can't take care of itself. It's completely helpless. So that's how the game starts. If who we really are is infinitely abundant, meaning we have the creative power to create anything, you know, universes, galaxies, anything happening in our lives day to day, the point is to create an experience opposite to that, which means forever seeking abundance but not being able to achieve it or not being able to keep it. And if our natural state is infinite joy, true joy, then in phase one, the point is to convince ourselves that we're unhappy campers, forever seeking happiness but never finding it. Now, the significance of this is that most people would say, well, I totally get that, you know. But the part that I didn't get until this was revealed to me is that as long as you're playing in phase one of the human game, that's the point of it. It's to experience limitation and restriction and the oppositeness of your natural state. Who you really are, it doesn't have any fascination with being abundant necessarily or making a lot of money or being happy. That's what it already is. It came here to have different experiences in this human, and a lot of that has to do with exploring limitation and restriction and what's possible there. So as long as you're in phase one, you're never going to get all your ducks in a row. You're never going to be happy and healthy and abundant and have great relationships, and you're never going to have everything that you want because that's not the point of the game in phase one. But most of us are taught you can create anything and you have this power and just use these techniques and you can manifest or attract whatever you want, and it doesn't work that way. But one of the things that I discovered is it isn't meant to work that way when you're in phase one. So most of us are very familiar with phase one, wanting to change, fix, and improve our lives in an endless number of ways and not really being able to at all, or it doesn't last. But then I discovered there's also a phase two of the game. And in phase two of the game, that whole process reverses. So when phase one was all about building this cloud cover and convincing yourself you're limited and restricted and opposite who you are, and playing around with limitation and restriction, phase two is about going into that cloud cover with a very powerful drill bit and drilling tunnels through it and poking holes and knocking out chunks so that that sun of who you really are can shine through. So phase two is what I call the drilling operation, and it's the opportunity to be able to stay here, not get enlightened and leave, it's the end of the game, but stay here, but have more and more access to that infiniteness of who you really are. And then there's a phase three to the human game, which is when you've knocked out enough of the cloud cover that a huge amount of the sunshine of the truth of who you really are is shining in. Then you get to just play there and, again, stay here in this amazing amusement park, but have a radically different experience day to day across the board in every aspect of your life. So the first component that's unique to this model is there's phase one, phase two, and phase three. And then I was taken to a way to create that drill bit. It's a set of tools that you can apply using what happens to you every day as the raw material. It's not meditating or being a monk or leaving the world and closing your eyes and being trying to do something, you know, purely in your mind away from the world. It's using what's actually happening in your life day to day to support you in going into that cloud cover, undermining the structural integrity of it, knocking it out, and having more and more sunshine in. And I discovered a way to do that and a way to navigate through the challenges of going back into that cloud cover, the heart of the lies, illusions, and stories you convinced yourself were true. And then guidance, and I just was then taken into and received guidance on how to then transition from phase two into phase three. And so my whole journey has been there, done that, experience it to a deep degree personally, and then pop up and do a debrief of some kind. And that's kind of what I've been doing. So that's the core of the model. It's understanding who you really are, why you're really here, the fact that phase one is not meant to be a have-it-all experience, and no matter what you do, it doesn't matter how hard you try or what techniques you use or how badly you want it or whatever, as long as you're in phase one, you're never going to get everything that you want. You're never going to get all your ducks in a row. You have to move into phase two. You have to do some really deep and profound work in the cloud cover, and when sunshine starts to shine, it transforms whatever it shines on, and that's where the magic comes from. And so that's a very quick overview of the model and what I discovered and what I was ultimately taken to. And even just that phase one piece is so powerful and so important, and it explains so many things I know everyone in your audience has struggled with.
Yes.
On that note, I'll be quiet and see where you want to go with all of this.
Well, I'm not sure where I'm going to go. I'm going to follow my guidance on this. I have some questions, but I love to really be very free-flowing about it. This is what I wanted to tell you when we first chatted before we actually got live on the call. a colleague of mine who I have a lot of respect for, who I see as being very abundant or just very successful, I'll put it that way, suggested to me that I get your book. And, of course, I did. And I started reading your book and, you know, reading what you were talking about in terms of phase one, and I got very excited. And, of course, my head was bobbing up and down. Yes, oh, yes, absolutely. I totally understood. And then you referred to something in there that I got so, and pardon my French, I got so pissed off by what you said that I refused to read one more word. And I put the book down and back in my bookcase and didn't pick it up until a month ago.
I am famous for pissing people off. That's also what's required to open into the truth, you know, because so much of what's out there isn't true. So it takes some pretty aggressive putting that in your face to get to that point, and that can push a lot of people's buttons. So go ahead.
Well, what was interesting to me, because it pushed up against one of my belief systems, and the belief systems, one of the things that you talk about in the book, and if you're on the webcast, you're going to see a button that you can go ahead and click on and pick up Robert's book on Amazon. If you don't have the book, I would say grab it, really. I mean, if you're intrigued by what we're talking about, get that book. And also check out the videos that I have that you can also take advantage of that Robert has done for free. So in my journey, I have definitely...
Are you
going to
tell me what made you so mad, or is that
where
you're going?
Yes, I'm
going to
tell you. I'm going to tell you right now.
Okay.
I really looked at personal accountability and responsibility of other people and did not see myself as the source of what people did or did not do. And you use an example, which I can so relate to because I'm definitely a Trekkie, a Star Trek person, of the example of a hologram. And I always love that idea. And you also talk about how the people that come into our lives are actually following scripts. I could resonate with that every person and situation is in our service to our growth and our evolution. But when you suggested that people are essentially showing up in the way that I want, I got very angry because my thought was, well, what are they responsible for, and why am I responsible for that? And I just refused to accept that. And so I didn't like you very much in that moment. And another friend of mine had also posed that very same thing, and I felt angry that I would... I mean, essentially the way that I took it was everything that was going on that people were doing or not doing was my fault. That's how I interpreted it, was my fault. And that everybody was, like, off scot-free, and they were all just doing what I wanted them to do, when clearly, from my perspective, they weren't doing anything I wanted them to do. So that was a real conflict for me, Robert. When I came back to reading your book the second time, I decided to approach it differently because, of course, I was going to read that part again, and I'm not in the same place as I was when I first read it. I've definitely, my consciousness is in a very different place. And I decided that I wanted to approach your book with curiosity. What if what you were talking about and some of the things that are conflictive for me to embrace, what if I just want to find out? Maybe there is truth to that. Maybe how I'm looking at it is limited. So I started having fun, because I wasn't having fun before. I started having fun with your ideas and realized how important it is to be more playful, especially in phase one, which I wasn't, and I feel like I'm in between phase one and phase two.
Okay.
And so then I got excited again about the possibilities because so much of what you were talking about from the ability to really create and to work through a lot of the deeper stuff, which is very much of the work that I do with clients and also within myself, you brought a few pieces that I hadn't considered as part of the transition that I got very excited about. So it started to make, I don't want to say more sense to me, it started to resonate more with my heart, and so now I keep your book handy, but I keep forgetting to do a couple of things because I'm not used to doing it. So that's a little bit about what my process was. I know that we'll talk more about that, and I'm sure that there are people and have been people who, when they come to that accountability piece and personal responsibility, that they have difficulty there.
Well, there's also something that's very often misunderstood, and I have to tell you, I may piss you off again with what I'm about to say, and I may piss off a bunch of people listening, but I have been on a very unique journey my entire life, and I've been shown some things that are very renegade in nature. They go against the grain of what most people say. And I have been able to verify the truthfulness of them for myself, but they're very renegade in nature. But it's the truth that I was shown, and so it's the truth that I share, you know, and I welcome people to accept or reject, and the only thing I ask is just don't do it purely at the intellectual level. Really look and see if you can find validity to it or you can find proof for it or whatever, but not just dance at the idea and concept level and say, I agree, I don't agree. But what I was shown on this journey when I'd knocked out enough cloud cover and enough sunshine was in that is that our lives, I'm fond of using, and I don't use this in the book, Bob, it's something I've started to use since, but I'm fond of using the metaphor of the Harry Potter books, because if you want to talk about one book that the odds are everyone has read or they've seen a movie or whatever, that's about the greatest chance that you have of a universally known thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the Harry Potter books, Harry Potter appears to have power and magic. He appears to have choice, free will, independent decision-making authority. He appears to be driving the bus in his own life, as do all the other characters in the story, except none of them do. Harry can't say anything. Harry can't think anything. Harry can't feel anything. Harry can't do anything. He can't feel anything. Nothing can happen unless J.K. Rowling, the author, writes it first.
Mm.
And to me, that is the truth of our existences. Whether you want to call it God or consciousness or whatever, is like the author of our stories. And we are the stars and the heroes in our own stories, but we're not the writers. We're not driving the bus. It looks like we have power and independent decision-making authority in our charting and driving our course, but we're not. We're characters in this amazing story. And so it's not that you, Lorraine, or you, whoever's listening, has to take responsibility for what's happening and that these other people are just doing what quote-unquote, you, Lorraine, or Robert, or whoever else asked, that's really not what it is. Everybody in the Harry Potter books, they're all there because J.K. Rowling, the author, wants them to be there, and they have a role to play in the story. And, again, they don't have any independent existence to be able to say, okay, J.K. Rowling, I'll do what you say or not. They just do it because that's what they're created to do, and that's what happens. And this is what I was shown. Unique and unpopular in many circles, I know, but it isn't actually. It's actually the most magical and freeing thing in the world once you have an experience of that being the truth, which you can. And so that's what I really meant by that. And so many of the things that you hear in self-help about creative power and manifesting and all this stuff, so much of that's true if you elevate it up to the author of the story, so to speak, but it's not true if you leave it with us, the players, the characters, the heroes in the story. And this is one of the things that was very hard for me to first understand and then to be able to actually experience the truth of, is that I'm a character in a story and I'm not driving the bus. I didn't write the story. I'm not writing the story. I don't have the power or the ability to change or fix or improve anything. The opportunity I have is to experience the truth and then go for the ride of my life in phase three without the limits and restrictions when you knock out the cloud cover. But this is very controversial, but it's what I was shown. And that's what I really meant by that. It's not that we, the characters, have to take responsibility, that we are creating it, that we ask these people to do things, you know, that's taught in a lot of metaphysical stuff. All I can say is that's not what I was shown,
mm-hmm.
and that's not what I've had the experience of. And again, it may seem, some people get all upset and they say, well, I'm just some kind of puppet or whatever, you know, and I don't have any free will and blah, 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 and they get all upset and they think it's bad news. But within that, within the kernel of it is the best possible news you could ever hear.
Mm.
Because it's the most powerful force in the universe, you know, whether you want to call it God or whatever, that's the writer and that wrote your story and is really interested in you experiencing specific things, which is why the story was written. And all of our stories are about different things and therefore have different things. You know, again, in Harry Potter has a lot of money. The Weasleys don't. Another character. You know, they're never going to be millionaires. It's just not the way their character was written. It's not what their story was about. Other characters have money and don't. The same thing is true for us. We're all here as characters and stories that where different things are being explored. And so different things are going to happen and not happen. Even in phase two and in phase three, when the sun's shining, we still are going to be, you know, what our life mission or purpose or whatever you want to talk about it is about, not what we may think we want from the limited perspective of the conscious mind.
So now that opens up another thought for me. And thank you for everything that you just shared about that. And it didn't piss me off. I actually liked it.
Okay. It is incredibly good news. It just can appear to not be on the surface.
So just really for people to wrap their head around or their heart around, I want to say your heart rather than your head, do you, as the personality in a physical body and the writer of the story, do you find that as the actor that you are in any co-creatorship with the writer of your story, or you are?
No.
Hmm.
If it appears that way, it's just because the story was written to appear that way. For example, if Harry Potter learns a spell and he's got his magic wand and he waves his wand and he says the magic words and he's got magic, it appears that magic will happen. You know, if he says the spell to make something light up, it appears to light up. If he uses the spell to disarm somebody else, they, you know, their wand or their weapon or whatever it is drops. Harry Potter doesn't have any magic. There isn't any cause and effect. If it appears to be, it's because J.K. Rowling wrote a scene that said, let's have Harry wave his wand and say this spell and then have this other person fly across the room or have the room light up. So if there appears to be co-creative, it's just that that's the way the story was written to make it look that way, but no, there isn't. But the important thing here, and this is something that's been so important to all of my work, not just the busting loose we're talking about, but other things that have come out and I've been shown after that, is I'm not interested in what I call the dance of ideas and concepts. I'm interested in what can you actually see if you look. What's really there, if you can look at what's actually there? And along these lines, you know, we've all memorized these things, especially if we've been on a spiritual or self-help path. We've memorized these things that say your thoughts create your own reality and all this kind of stuff. What you focus on tends to manifest, blah, blah, blah. And we know all of that, but if we look around and you look with brutal honesty, it's clear that you are not driving the bus. And I'll give you three examples of this quickly. I mean, again, we could talk for weeks on this. The law of attraction is a really great example of something that's very sexy and it sounds very appealing and everybody wishes that it were true, except it's not. And here's what happens if you really look at that with brutal honesty. First, if it's a law that whatever you focus on manifests or whatever your dominant thoughts are on is what's going to happen, then every time you have really dominant negative thoughts that something bad's going to happen to you, something bad should happen to you, except it doesn't. All of us, everybody listening, has had experiences where you were absolutely certain something bad was going to happen to you, and it didn't happen. On the flip side, if it's a law, then if your dominant thoughts are about da-da-da-da good thing happening to you, then the good thing should happen to you, except it doesn't. If you look at these things, they fail more than they succeed, if you really look. And then the third one, which is the real fly in the ointment, the real wrench in the mechanism, is if it's your thoughts that are creating everything, how do you explain when something really wonderful happens in your life, or horrible, but for the moment, let's say wonderful happens in your life that you never thought about, never even crossed your mind, and yet it happens. There's all kinds of stories. You know, you read the biographies of successful people and other kinds of things. You see all kinds of things where something they had no goal for, never thought about, didn't want, weren't seeking, this massively wonderful thing pops into their life, and you have to say, well, where did that come from? So when you look at these three things, the dominant bad thoughts don't manifest all the time. The dominant good thoughts don't manifest all the time. And there's stuff that's manifesting that nobody thought about. Again, if you look at that with brutal honesty, you have to say there's some other creative force that's determining what's happening to me.
Absolutely.
And so, you can also just knock out enough cloud cover that your actual experience, and this is not possible to describe, but your actual experience is that that's the truth. You're a character in a story. You're not creating it. It's the same kind of a thing as if you're reading a great novel and the story's just unfolding, you know, and you're aware of it. So this is, to me, it's very, very, very important. And once you get through the initial shock and perhaps judgmental stories about, well, then I'm this wimpy puppet nothing and I don't like that, you know, once you get through all of that, which from my experience everybody does if it comes up at all, This then becomes really good news, because you don't have to be intending for everything, you know, you don't have to be trying to manifest everything, you don't have to be trying to get clear all the time about what do you really want and then what's the best strategy and how do you refine their strategy and what if it's not working and is this the right partner for me? Is this not the right partner for me? Should I take this job or quit it? Should I divorce or stay with my partner? You know, all the, you don't have to worry about it anymore, because you didn't write the script, and your opportunity is to, you know, be the hero and have the story unfold, but you don't have the burden and the stress, whatever you want to call it, of having to make it all happen. It's a marvelous, and it's not some mind game, you know, it's not a trick where you say, well, just look at it as if you're not driving the bus so that you don't feel as stressed. You know, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying really experiencing the truth of it. It's very freeing, but it's not just that it's freeing. It's that, to me, it's the truth. And it can be seen and it can be experienced. It isn't just, again, an idea, concept, theory you have to accept on faith. You really can see this and experience it once you have enough cloud cover knocked out and enough sunshine is shining in, and then it becomes this amazing adventure. And then, again, I could talk for hours about what that means, but it's a hard one for a lot of people to accept, or to accept long enough to get in there, do something in the cloud cover, poke some holes, allow some sun to shine in so that you can really have, I call it, a direct experience of the truth with capital T's. But this is what I've been shown. This is what I've experienced. And I continue to experience. I keep going deeper and deeper and deeper into the truth that was started with this busting loose stuff, and keep narrating what's happening to me and working with people that want to continue traveling on this path and going deeper and deeper and deeper into it. It's extraordinary stuff. But to me, the truth with capital T's is diametrically opposed to most of what we're taught, even in spiritual, esoteric, you know, supposed to be high levels of consciousness stuff. You know, there's still a lot of phase one cloud covery stuff that just isn't true. But when you're able to align with what's true and knock out cloud cover and begin to play in more and more and more sunshine, it's the most amazing, extraordinary, words don't serve to what kind of a shift, you called it paradigm shift, that it really creates, and how everything that happens in your life, stuff you'd now call good, stuff you'd now call bad, stuff you'd now call whatever, everything just transforms, and you have a radically different experience. And when you knock out enough cloud cover, as I said before, it's no longer about limiting and restricting you and preventing you from getting things that you want. The limiter's taken off, and all of a sudden, all kinds of things can happen and get created that are beyond your wildest imagination. And it becomes, again, an extraordinary adventure. But the first thing you have to do is be brutally honest about what's really going on, go into the cloud cover, do some deep and profound work there, start knocking out chunks of it so that the sun can start shining. And when the sun starts to shine, that sunlight, everything else then takes care of itself.
Where does desire come into this, or passion or yearnings? All of that, from your experience, is part of what's been written for us?
Yeah. So many of these questions, if you use the example of Harry Potter or some other novel, and you just ask yourself, if Harry Potter appears to have a desire for something in the story, if he appears to be passionate about something, and in his case, he's passionate about defeating Voldemort, the ultimate bad guy, where does it come from? Does Harry really have a desire? Is Harry really passionate about it? In a way, you could say yes, but the truth is that it's J.K. Rowling, the writer, expressing herself creatively in that way, and it's really her expressing herself. It's not Harry being passionate or having desires. It's just that that's the way it was written.
Hmm.
But if you were Harry, like we are all our own characters, we would certainly think it's our desires and our passions, and we're the ones doing things, and we have power, and it does seem that way to us. But mostly it's because we're hypnotized by the lies, illusions, and stories in the cloud cover. And when you begin to mess around with the cloud cover and sunshine starts to shine in, you really begin to experience, again, not just embrace an idea. You begin to experience the truth of it. And what I have experienced, and now tens of thousands of people around the world have experienced, is that this whole thing about us being characters in a story and not the authors and not driving the bus and all of that is the truth of what this whole human experience is about.
Mm. We have two questions coming in, and I'd like to just pose those to you. The first one comes in from Karen in Chapel Hill, and she says, so I don't have control of my life? I can't change my life?
No.
If you
have a desire to change your life, and you embrace some sort of technique or strategy, whether it's metaphysical or it's mainstream, and your life appears to change, it isn't because you had power. It's because in the story it was written for you to appear to do da-da-da-da and for your life to then change. But, again, go back to the metaphor of Harry Potter. If Harry Potter swings a wand and says a spell, or he does whatever, not even using magic, is he really doing anything? Or is it the consciousness, the creativity, whatever you want to call it, of J.K. Rowling, the author, that's really doing it? It's a very seductive illusion that we're doing it, but we're not. And again, this isn't just an idea or a concept. It is possible when you knock out enough cloud cover to actually experience this. I say experience with a capital E. It's not something that's just an idea you have to accept on faith. You can prove it to yourself. You can actually experience that that's the truth, but you got to go into that cloud cover and start knocking it out, or it'll just stay as an idea that you accept or reject. But so no. You cannot change your life. If your life changes, it's because that's what the story was written to be. And if it doesn't, or you tried a technique 10 times and 3 times it worked and 7 times it didn't, then that was the story.
You know, the point that you just made is until you actually knock out enough cloud cover, you're really not going to know if what Robert is suggesting and saying as his experience is true. So if you're struggling with this, I would just say let that go for now, or see the struggle as part of your story, and just continue to do the inner work.
Other thing I want to add here, too, just so I don't forget.
Yeah, please.
If you look at the human experience as an amusement park like Disney World, Disney World's got all kinds of rides and attractions, and, you know, nobody ever does all of them. There's too many. You know, you'd probably have to stay there for 6 months to do everything that's at Disney World. Spiritual development, traveling down a path like this, enlightenment, spiritual awakening, whatever you want to talk about, is ultimate opportunities, and they're only one ride in the amusement park. It's not a ride everybody's got to ride as a mandatory thing before they can graduate. It's just one ride. And everybody's story is not about that. Everybody's story is not about knocking out cloud cover. Everybody's story is not about experiencing the truth with capital T's. But if it is, you will find yourself embracing this or something else if your story is unique that will take you down a path that will get you there. And if it's not, you won't. But again, it'll just happen. Or it won't happen. But it isn't, you know, there's so many things that say that the earth is a school and you have to come here and learn your lessons and work off your karma and evolve to the point where you can graduate and go to some other school or some other something in some other universe or other planet or level of consciousness or whatever, and that's not the case from what I've been shown. You can come here and travel a spiritual path. You can come here and knock out cloud cover like I'm talking about and experience the truth of the human, and you can come here and be a football star and that's all you do and you never touch a book or anything about truth or spirituality, or you can dabble in it but not really do what it takes to knock out cloud cover, because that's not your story. You know, everyone's story is not to defeat Voldemort. It was Harry's story. Plenty of other characters, you know, that's not what their story was about, you know.
Robert, Karen asks, so who is the author, God or our higher self or consciousness? Is that who the author is?
Ultimately, the author is, like, they say there's like 7 billion people or something on the planet right now.
Mm-hmm.
So theoretically, in a lot of metaphysical circles, that would mean there's 7 billion higher selves, and 7 billion higher selves are writing 7 billion different stories, you know? That's not what I've been shown. What I've been shown is there's one, whatever you want to call it, consciousness, God, source, author, with a capital A, whatever. And it's writing all the stories with all the characters, and there's only one. You know, that's the core of where this whole oneness thing that gets really distorted is really coming from. But there's only one. And to me, again, this is one of those things that from what I was shown, just my bias, it's another one of these myths or what I call lies, illusions, and stories that we all have this higher self and we're being guided, and some unique aspect, personal aspect to us is what's creating our day-to-day life, you know, or can be, the assistance can be sought to get help. To me, that's just not true. There's one consciousness. The equivalent would be J.K. Rowling is the author of the Harry Potter books, and all of us are in the Harry Potter books. So there's one author that's responsible for all of us, as I have been shown.
Okay, thank you.
And experience it.
There's one other question that I do want to put out from Tony, and she says, Robert, would you say that what the soul wants overrides what the mind might think it wants, or would you just use different language here? Am I understanding this? And I think that what you just said also spoke to Tony's question, unless you have something that you would like to specifically say to her.
No, and again, I understand that I can be pushing a lot of buttons here, but to me, there is no individual soul or energy that enters a physical body, you know? There's no soul that has entered the body of Harry Potter. Harry Potter is a completely made-up character that's a creation of consciousness and creativity. There isn't something that reincarnated into his body or a soul that entered his body and is living in it. That's not, again, what I've been shown. So... When you talk about soul overriding, generally when soul is used, it's the individual, you know, so there'd be 7 billion souls that could override the stories of the personality, and that just isn't what I've been shown. Again, I've been shown that it's the one consciousness or awareness or whatever else you want to call it, creator. I like author because the more deeply I move into truth, the more accurate the metaphor of a novel really is for what's going on. So I like author.
Mm-hmm.
But you can use any label. It doesn't matter. Nobody can override anything. It's all up to the author. And even, again, anytime it appears that an individual character, meaning you or me in a story, has power, there's cause and effect, we did something, we made something happen. Anytime it appears that way, it just appears that way, because the story was, you know, when you watch the Superman movies, it looks like the character's flying. The character's not really flying. Appears to be flying, but isn't really, you know, same thing. Whenever it appears that we're driving the bus, we have power, we're manifesting, we steered our ship in a particular direction in our life, it just appears that way, but it's always the author. And the author, again, I want to hammer this point home, the author is always writing specific stories with specific heroes, that's what all of us are, in order to play with and explore and express itself creatively in unique ways and have unique experiences. We all have a different, which is common out there in the literature, we all have a different mission and purpose, and our stories are all about exploring and playing with different things. and riding different rides in the amusement park that are available, to go back to that metaphor, and that's what determines everything. What did the author want to explore with your particular story and your particular character, and that's what shapes everything that's going to happen and what's not going to happen and when and how, you know?
One of the things that you mention in your book, and I believe that I'm remembering it correctly, is that you don't really strategize your day, that you live very much in the moment and really just allow whatever, I'm going to say it this way, that you feel guided to do moment to moment, as opposed to doing heavy planning or heavy strategizing that so many people are still very attached to.
Again, I had a direct experience of the fact that I was not driving the bus and the kind of stuff that we've talked about. So when I had that realization, what happened is the desire to try to drive the bus anywhere specifically, to set goals, to set my intentions, to say, well, this is what I would prefer to have happen, and da-da-da-da, all of that just evaporated. You know, again, when you read a novel, and let's say you're reading a novel, it could be a movie, but let's talk about a novel that you're really riveted by, you know, you don't want to go to sleep, you just want to keep turning the pages because the story's so good. No matter what's happening to the main character, good or bad, you know you can't change any of it. You don't try to change any of it. You generally don't even judge it that much. I mean, you may have a stray thought that says, oh, shit, I wish that hadn't happened to the hero, or, oh, boy, how are they going to get out of this mess, you know? But it just it flips in and it flips out of your mind, and you keep turning the pages, and the story keeps unfolding, and you're not making anything happen. You know, you're aware of the story that's unfolding as you're flipping the pages. That's the way I experience day-to-day life in a very similar kind of a way. I'm aware of what's being done, but I know I'm not doing it. And I'm aware, I mean, it's amazing, and the mind is never going to be able to understand it. This is something that you have to experience. But that's the way I live my life. So I don't set goals, and I don't have intentions, and I don't have preferences. And there are certain times I have to do certain things. You know, I'm doing a live event at the end of this month, the first one I've done in 5 years, and we had to make certain plans, you know. We had to book a hotel, and we had to have a room big enough, you know, kind of guessing how many people might come. You know, there's certain things like that that appear.
Sure.
But I don't live by goals. I don't plan my days. I don't, not planning for retirement. I don't, there's all that kind of stuff I don't do anymore, because it all just dropped away. I didn't stop. I didn't choose to stop doing it. It fell away when I had a direct experience of what was really going on.
Beautiful. Robert, you know, I want to be very cognizant of your time. We do have one more question coming in. So do you want me to give you that question? And maybe
I'm happy to stay as long as it takes within reason, you know, so go ahead.
Okay. So why don't we just hang out for a couple more minutes? There's a question coming in from Marianne, and she says, if our path is already written, how do we get the script so we know what's in store for us? I'm smiling at you, Marianne.
You don't. But here's the important thing.
Right.
The reason that we would want to have access to the script is because we're afraid
that
really bad's going to happen, or we think we'd like to be able to look at it and say, well, that's okay in the script, and that's not, and I want to change that, and I want to change. But when you really have a direct experience of what's going on, there isn't any fear about what's coming around the corner or what could happen tomorrow. Again, it's just like you're paging through an incredible novel that's the greatest adventure, you know, you've ever written, and you're loving every second of it. That's point one. Point two is I am absolutely convinced, and every day I become more convinced about this, that surprise and fun are inextricably entwined. And if you knew everything that was going to happen in advance, it could still be a lot of fun, but it's not as fun as if you don't know. It's like if you read a book or you watch a movie that's got a surprise ending, and then you go back and you watch it again when you know what the ending is, you can still enjoy the movie, but it's not the same thing as if you didn't know and you were surprised. So many of us, and I was like this for the longest time, of really being afraid that I just, you know, something really bad could happen, and I want to know what's coming around the corner so that I can avoid bad stuff and create good stuff. And, again, it's coming from that lie that I'm really driving the bus, but I really wanted to know because I was scared and I was uncomfortable. But when you really have a direct experience of what's really going on, and that the most powerful force in the universe who can create anything and only creates what it wants is driving the bus and writing the story, and you really get that, not intellectually, but experientially, the fear drops away, and then you can just enjoy the story so much more deeply than you can a novel where you're not actually the character, you know, you're not actually the hero, you're just reading about the hero. But for us, we actually are the hero, you know, we think everything they think, we feel everything they feel, we have the whole experience. That's the magic of this whole human thing. It's a total immersion story. It's a total immersion movie, as I call it. But you're never going to get a hold of the script, although there certainly are examples where we get hints every now and then about something that's coming down the line, or we get a vision of something, but it's not all the time and it's not all the details. And some people never get that, but some people, they'd call it intuition, or they'd call it a vision, or they'd call it a premonition, or... So you could say there are times that we're given little brief glimpses of something that's coming, but never the whole script, and you wouldn't want to.
Even if you could, you wouldn't want to, because
it would ruin the surprise, and the experience would not be as magical as it is when you don't know what's coming.
Yeah. Well, I have a feeling that as people listen to the replay of this, that it will definitely create some discomfort, lots of questions, and what I just invite you all to do is just let all of what Robert has said just percolate, just see where it takes you, and just embrace this call as something as part of your journey. You know, we can take in a lot of information, and until it becomes part of our personal experience, it doesn't quite anchor in quite the same way. So my intention in bringing Robert to you was to stir the pot a bit, and I think that we've done that today. I encourage you, if you resonate with what Robert has said, to check out his book, to check out his videos, and just let what you've heard today just continue to process inside of you. So, Robert, is there anything that I haven't asked you that you want to be sure that you add?
No, I just want to reinforce the point that I made a few times, which is so much of life and being on the spiritual path and reading and going to workshops and seminars is, again, about what I call the dance of ideas and concepts, which ultimately can be a nice first step, but it doesn't get you anywhere. It has to drop down to experiential for there to be any real transformation, for anything to really change. It has to become an experience, not a dance of ideas and concepts swirling in your mind. And there is an opportunity to have a direct experience of absolutely everything that I've talked about, and a lot of things I could talk about that we didn't have time. And that this is not something, maybe in the beginning it has to be accepted on faith until you can have the experience yourself, but it ultimately is something that you can prove to yourself, you can experience for yourself, and can begin this extraordinary adventure on your own versus just, again, dancing with an idea and a concept. You can prove all of this to yourself if it's part of your story and you go down this path. And if you happen to resonate with what I offer, then there are specific tools that you can use day in, day out as things happen in your life, and then you'll have the opportunity to prove it to yourself. But that's where the magic is. And the other thing I just want to say is that takes time. Knocking out the cloud cover is not something that happens in a day or a week, or in most cases, it's multiple years. And a lot of people kind of go, oh, no. You know, for me, knocking out a lot of cloud cover and having serious major transformation was after 6.5 years on this path. That's not a rule or a formula. It can be less, it can be more. But I like to tell people this is not a get-rich-quick, you know, 30 days to change your life, 90 days to change your life. You know, it's not like that. You're talking about very powerful stuff and very dense cloud cover, and it's also not meant to unfold quickly, because ultimately who you really are wants to savor every single second of the knocking out of the cloud cover, the rise back into infiniteness, and the different kinds of... And so it doesn't want to have it happen really fast, because then you'd get cheated. It would be like... having a movie be fast forwarded so that a 2.5 hour movie was viewed in 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't get the experience of the movie. You'd be cheated out of all of the, or the same thing with a novel, you know, if you didn't read all 300 pages or it whipped by so fast that you only picked up a few things. So it's meant to unfold more slowly and over time so that you can really savor it.
Yeah.
And other than that, I think I really got out the stuff I really wanted to get out and some things I didn't think I'd say, but I did, so that's good.
That's great. One thing that I want to point out that I really appreciated in reading Robert's book was that he describes a process for helping to clear the cloud cover. Many of the pieces, many of the steps that he shares are things that you've heard me share on calls before, and it may be some things that you're already doing, which can be great news. There was about two or three pieces that I had not seen as part of my own process that I really loved. So what you could find very, very valuable in reading his book is to have I think it's an easy process to follow, not necessarily an easy process to experience, but it gives you the steps so that you can begin to start to have some of the breakthroughs that you're wanting. And again, it takes a lot of practice, and really important that if you need some help in really anchoring that process into your day-to-day life, to reach out and get help from professionals. I'd love to help you if you need some help. So that you can work with the feeling part of the experience, because that's not something that you can sidestep in order to clear the cloud cover. You have got to do the feeling work. That is essential. So, Robert, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
My pleasure. Again, I appreciate the opportunity. And look at all of this, like you said, as drops in your pond that are going to ripple out from here, and where they go, they go. This was not meant to be complete. There wasn't enough time to go into the tools or get a lot more specific on all of this. So the whole point of this was to shake you up a little bit, to open you up to some different possibilities and ways of looking at your life and what success and abundance are really all about and what's possible here. And then there's an opportunity, if you resonate with it, to go more deeply, and if you don't, to not, you know.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Thank you so much. Well, again, thank you, Robert, and I want to extend my heartfelt gratitude for those of you who joined us live today and for those of you who will be listening to the recording. Again, you'll find links on the webcast to purchase Robert's book, which I do encourage you to take a look at, even just from a point of curiosity if, you know, some things did get shaken up. And be sure to view two of his videos that I've posted, one on happiness and one on abundance. And if you feel that this has been a call that you want to share with your friends, please do. I'm going to be keeping this recording available for quite some time. So, again, Robert, my wish for you is to have a beautiful day. I'm sure if that's what's been written, you'll have that. And,
well, the truth is it can't be anything other than that, except in a story that the mind makes up. So
I'm with you. So namaste. Many blessings to all of you. May you have wonderful adventures in busting loose from your own money game. Be well until we come together again. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
The moderator has left the conference.